Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadikaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
So starting with the at the Bhagavad Gita study guide, part one, man's eternal relationship with Godhead. Okay. So first look at the preface, page 5. The thematic study of Bhagavad Gita offered at the Bhaktivedanta Academy is based on the analysis of Bhagavad Gita by Srila Prabhupada. In this analysis, His Divine Grace divides the study of the Gita in three sections. Part 1, man's eternal relationship with Godhead, Sambandha. Part 2, man's duty towards Godhead, Abhiteya. And Part 3, man's ultimate necessity and perfection of life, Prayojana. Part 2 is further divided in two sections, man's duty towards Godhead and the nature of Godhead. Part 1 contains 46 lessons. Part 2 contains 53. Part 3 contains 3 lessons. Some of the lessons are main points, adhikaranas, and some are secondary points which prove evidence for the main points. Every adhikarana replies to a doubt and in turn raises a doubt, which is answered in the next adhikarana. Right? Does that understand? Means an adhikarana is the main point that's being made, the thesis. Right? So when you have the logic, you have a thesis that you're establishing. Then from the thesis, then you are going through giving your reasons, giving your explanations, right? Giving any synthesis between the doubts, and then bringing it to the point of the conclusion again, so that the thesis has been established. So that whole thing together is the, basically you can say, the adhikarana. Right, how it functions. But now the adhikarana itself, excuse me, the adhikarana is presented through that logic, but the adhikarana is that main point. Does this make sense? So what it is in all these lessons that are there, in other words, Prabhupada gave it as these different points, then there'll be a main point, and then so many points will give support and other elements of it. Then he'll go to the next point, the next point, the next point. Now, as we see, like when Bhaktivinoda Thakur was going through on the Tattva Sutras, right, for the Ishvapanishad study, then there's a point to be established, right? So he establishes that. And then once all doubts are removed on that point, but then that point being established, the point itself brings up a new point. Does that make sense? So then you say, so therefore we have this. So understanding this, then one might think this, or one might say, right? He would always be saying that. Then he would go into, therefore the author has made this point. And then there's the next adhikarana. Does that make sense? So that's just the typical way that the Vedantic, you know, philosophy or the Vedic presentation works. Right? It's logical. So you establish a point. So then once that's established, if that brings up any other points, then that's addressed next, until you've completed, all the different points that connect to each other. So now it concludes, right? So then that will be these different parts here. So part one, part two, part three, they will conclude in themselves. Yes. It's chronological. It means how you say the I'm not sure what would be the correct breakdown of the word, but the chrono is logical. Right? You understand? In other words, it's the logic of presenting the points. Like that. So, but each point is presented with logic. Right? Then, having established that point, then the doubt will come up, but the doubt is coming from the mind. Right? Does that make sense? So it's not necessarily how you would make the presentation, because there's two ways you can do it. You can make a presentation, and you can just take it logically through the steps, one what comes to the other. But the difficulty is the mind itself isn't logical. Right? It has its own you could say, logic, in that by observing a field, right? You have a field of activities. You observe it with the senses. Right, because that's how does the mind get in contact, right? That's how we know anything, is through the senses. So through the senses, then the mind observes the field. From observing that, you can see that there is a particular mood of that field, there's particular results you can get, there's certain purposes within the different elements that are there, and activity you can do to get that result. So the mind, seeing all that, becomes inspired. Right? Then being inspired, then contemplating it, what you can get, it gets attached. Right? And when it's attached, then we're going to work very hard to get what we want. Does that make sense? So it's a logic. But the generally things we have this facility, you can do this with this facility, you can get this result with that facility. Right? That would be standard logic. Right? But the point is the mind will go from here's the field. This is what we can get from the field. Therefore, we're going to do this activity to get it. Does that make sense? So, in here, then you're going to have a combination where you have the logical presentation, but that logical presentation is being made to convince the mind. Does that make sense? So you're going to have that combination that from here you might move on to another point, but because the mind will have a doubt, therefore, we deal with that doubt. So the chronology. So all the points will be made, but we move through it in a pattern that the mind itself would be comfortable with. Does that make sense? Right. Yes.
Is it the same principle that when we are studying the different sutras?
Yes, the different sutras. It's a standard thing. Is that means this whole point of now we're being introduced to this Adhikarana. Right, so this principle we're going to see right through now. You know, from now on, it'll be a major element, because especially in the how do you say Vedanta Chakshus course. So there we'll be studying Vedanta Sutra and the Satsandarbhas. So at that point, all they're dealing with is Adhikaranas. Means that's how it will be defined, right? Because you're dealing with sutras. So they give the main point, and then that logic, that panchanga nyaya, that five-limbed process of logic. So Prabhupada's using that here, right? So it's based on the Vedanta Sutra and how the Upanishadic, in other words, the Vedantic presentation. It will always go from the point, the thesis, logically present that, and having established that point, so that's accepted, then what doubt comes up from having established that point, that's what you deal with next. Right? Does that make sense? So you're logically going through, but that logic is going through is how the mind will accept it. Yes?
This analysis by Srila Prabhupada, is it available?
Is it available? Means it itself is... Only I got this? Oh, this is giving with all the... Yeah, okay. If you look at the folio, then it's not in the main section. I think there's a second section is in the folio, at least the newer folio. And in that section back there with so many things, I think, is it called Analysis of Bhagavad Gita? It's just called Analysis of Bhagavad Gita. It's just because one point is that means these 46 lessons, 53 and 3, they're just one right after another. It just says part 1, man's eternal relation with Godhead, Then it gives 46 points right after another. Then it has the part two, man's duty towards Godhead, the 53 points in two sections. And then the part three, man's ultimate necessity and perfection of life, and has 3 points. But that's all. It doesn't. There's no explanation or anything. What he does is he's given the point and given the Gita verses that deal with it. Right? So it's for... This is why we're saying is that this is the second aspect of the study. The first being chronological study. The second is that thematic. Right? So now he's taking, you know, anything to do with Sambandha and putting it all in one place. Right? So he takes the first point, and then anywhere it is in Gita, then he'll pull it all together. Right? If it's only in one place, then it's there, but then there'll be that logical order. Does that make sense? But that's what's there. So, the devotees were... I've showed it to various devotees, and I only had one devotee that understood its significance. Because from his background, he had, you know, studied Vedanta and all the, you know, Vedic and Upanishads and all that, so he could understand that way of thinking. So when he read it, he could see the significance that was there. Most devotees I showed it to, they said, well, this doesn't make any sense. They weren't used to that kind of chronology. Right? So then didn't catch anyone's attention. I think to today, it hasn't caught anyone's attention. So the previous study guide was based simply on this. So previously, this study, that was the main course. The chronological is a very light course beforehand that you went through. And so the main study was on this. But we found that the way it was put together, the presentation, it was hard to tell. Devotees couldn't identify what was the original analysis and what was the points put in to understand that analysis by the devotee who was compiling it. So then that's been readjusted. And then there was also a difficulty is because there was so much prominence on these points that were being made that I don't know if anybody has anyone ever taken a purport and read it more than once, right after another, right? So the first time you see is that, okay, you catch one or two points in the whole purport. Okay, if I was giving a class, I could speak on this point, or, you know, sometimes you have to look like that. You read it the second time, then you start getting so many points. You read the third time, so you get the, you know, it's then whole sentences start. You read again, then words start, you know, it just keeps getting more and more. So his method was he read every purport 6 times. Then after reading it 6 times, then he made the questions. This Adnatattva, like that. He's one of the original, you know, founders of the academy, like that. So himself, Sahota Maharaj, Narasimha Prabhu, Krishna Kshetra, and started the academy in 84. So then, but the difficulty came is that anybody who was doing the course was only reading the purport once. So for much of the questions he was asking, it was obvious. But for a lot of them, they couldn't understand. You know, and I'm not talking just general devotees here, because when the course first came out, the first ones that took it were all the sannyasis and GBCs and like this. But no one could get past halfway through, because they couldn't, it got so technical, they couldn't figure it out. So now Pandava Bandhaprabhu has taken that and re-presented it, you know, and put in his own. What he's added this time is that now understanding how the Panchanga Nyaya works with the Adhikaranas, he's taken it and looked at what Prabhupada has given and put it into the Adhikaranas. And the amazing thing is it just naturally falls into that. Because Prabhupada mentions that, he's quoting Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, that in philosophical circles, then philosophy is presented through the Panchanga Nyaya. It's just that's the way it's done. So I've always seen Prabhupada's purports were like that, and even like this. So then he applied this onto this study and found that it was exactly the same. Right? So that will so that he's added to, and then we've taken those points that were being made and put them as part of the study. Instead of being part of the questions, they're part of the study. Does that make sense? And then we're continuing with our how we've established that the question part is the essay. You know, I mean, what you'll be tested on is the essay. Because before it was, the thing was writing all those different points out and going to and finding them and all that. So the point was, is the most you could find, but if you hadn't read the purport six times, some of them you couldn't find. So, like that. Okay, so. The thematic study opens with a list of the adhikaranas connected with the Dasamula Tattva. These adhikaranas are then presented together with their evidence and the doubts they raise and answer. Next, the relevant questions and answers from Srila Prabhupada's purports are added for further clarification. The section is concluded with a summary of the main points. Okay, so the thematic study opens with a list of the adhikaranas, so that is combining what Prabhupada's given with the Dasamula Tattva. Right, just putting it into that order so we can see it, and that is being presented. We're giving the headings of the Panchanga Nyaya so that we get used to it, like that. But the point itself, the main points, those are Prabhupada's points. The Panchanga Nyaya is we're applying that on what Prabhupada gave in the purports he gave. So that's all what Prabhupada gave. Just that he only originally gave the original thing. We've gone and pulled from the purports, right? Like that. Next, the relevant questions and answers, that is what we were discussing before. The Atmatattva pulled from reading the purport six times, like that. So that will go through and like that. Then there's a summary that has also then been put together by the author of this present study guide. Okay. All lessons are taken from, so the lesson is the original, right? All lessons are taken from Srila Prabhupada's analysis of Bhagavad Gita. All notes on the lessons are a humble attempt to elucidate their meaning. Okay, so we can, just to get an idea, you can see if we go back to page 2, right? So then on the table of contents, so you see here it says lesson 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, they just go straight through, right? Those are the original, what Prabhupada gave, right? You know, so in this point of that, you know, that the nature of Godhead, right? That's the first section, right? The first part is man's eternal relationship with Godhead is the constitution of all living entities. So then we see it's second chapter, 11 to 30. Then lesson 2, parts and parcels of Godhead, 15:7. Lesson 3, living entities compared with the sun and the sun rays, 13:34. Qualitative one and the same, 14:2. Krishna begets all living entities in the womb of Mother Nature, 14:3 and 14:4. Right? So this is the original. So if you read that through, then you get, so this works in a very nice chronological system. Now what's happening here is the first adhikarana then deals with 1 through 5. So it's all living entities are eternal and subordinate to Godhead. Right? Then you have these parts here. Then the second adhikarana, material nature is subordinate to Godhead. Right? And then it has you know, from 6 to 15 established that. Right? According to the Panchanga Nyaya. Right? Then adhikarana 3, 4, 5, how many get here? 5, 6. So there's 6 adhikaranas, right? But there's 46 lessons. Does that make sense? So the six each there's 6 adhikaranas, and then it's sub lessons. So there's the main lesson, and then the supportive lessons. So does that make sense? So total you get 46. So that's how the method. So first is an overview of it. Then we'll get into more detail. Then into, you know, all the different things. And then we move on to the next section, right? The idea is that by going through it in these various levels, we'll get a clearer picture of it, right? Because otherwise, if we go into just all the big thing and go through, then we don't see the forest for the trees, right? So the first is we go back and go, that's a forest, right? Then we get a little closer and see the forest is made of trees. Then we go in and look at the trees, right? Basically, that works everywhere, but unless you're in Sweden, right? Because in Sweden, you go along and something like this would go, oh, forest, you know? And then they go, the Swedish person would go, no, that's bush. You know, that's not forest. You know, then you get to a bigger tract of land, you know, and then you say, you know, that's forest. And they say, no, that's just, that's a little, like this. Until you get to where it's like, hundreds of kilometers, that this is forest, right? Like that. Okay, so the Adhikaranas means for this whole section. In other words, you're seeing all Adhikaranas together for the whole section. Then we'll go, the next thing is looking at the individual Adhikarana, right? Then we'll get into the detail, okay? So this is for the overview of the whole, this whole first part. Adhikarana 1, lessons 1 to 5. All living entities are eternal and subordinate to Godhead. Yes. What does lesson one mean? It means the study of the first point the Prabhupada made in his analysis. Does that make sense? So there's 46 points he made, so we're taking each point as a lesson. Did Prabhupada use the term lesson? Atmatattva used it as lesson, because he broke it down like that. But Prabhupada, it was just, these are the points. Right? Oh, one thing to also note. Just to make it so it's a little more clear, is that on this analysis of Bhagavad Gita that's written that you'll find in the folio, basically speaking, I'm not sure how much, somewhere between 80-90%, a little more like 70, 60-70% means the lessons that we're using here, everything's exactly the same. There's a difference in what purports, which verses are quoted. So that was found is why there's a difference, because this was originally written back in the 50s on the original Gita that was stolen or lost. Right? Prabhupada had it, the manuscript was ready, he found someone to publish it, then when he went back, the manuscript was gone. So he had to write again. So what he's written again is what we have. So then Atmatattva spent, I don't know, a long time, years, going through every purport until he found where it had come. Because the verse doesn't change. But where he gave the whole nyaya on explaining it, that sometimes changed from one purport to another. So he went for years to figure out where the purports were. So you'll find is that the point Prabhupada makes, all living entities are eternal and subordinate to Godhead, that won't be any difference between this and what's in the folio. But what verses there, you might find a difference. 60% or so will be the same, and another 40% has been adjusted because it's the two different copies of Gita. That makes sense? That may also make it a reason why devotees haven't taken it so seriously, is they can't find what Prabhupada is speaking about. All living entities are eternal and subordinated to Godhead. Adhikarana 2, lesson 6 through 15. Material nature is subordinated to Godhead. The first two Adhikaranas are confirmed in the Dasamula Tattvas follow. 1. The Vedas are the principal scriptural evidence, which in turn expound the following 9 principles. 2. Krishna is the supreme absolute truth. 3. Krishna is omnipotent. 4. He is the fountainhead of all relationships and love. 5. The living entities are his separated parts and particles. Right? He is omnipotent, means it will include the material energy, and living entities are his parts and parcels. They're included in there, but then they're given extra attention, right? Because it's us who has to become self-realized, not material energy. She doesn't really have any problem with this. Right? Adhikarana 3, lesson 16 to 20. The living entity is born of spiritual nature, but it has the tendency to enjoy material nature. Forgetfulness of his real nature is the cause of his multifarious trouble. Right? The third Adhikarana is confirmed in the Dasamula Tattva as follows. 6. The living entity, due to his constitutional situation as the marginal energy, may come under the sway of material nature. Right? Adhikarana 4, lessons 21 to 31. Godhead himself Godhead comes himself or sends his confidential servants to reclaim these forgetful living entities. The forgetful living entities can know Godhead only if he explains himself or if he is explained by his confidential servants. Right? Because between the spirit, it means by material knowledge and material senses, you cannot know God who's transcendental. So it's only when he comes or his servants come, by their association, then we can know. Adikarna 5, lessons 32 to 37. The confidential servants of Godhead explain that any man can attain to transcendental loving service of Godhead by his own occupation. Adikarnas 4 and 5 are confirmed in the Dasamula Tattva as follows. 7. Again, due to his marginal nature, the living entity in the liberated condition is free from the influence of material nature. Adikarna 6, lessons 38 to 46. This is possible because Godhead is both immanent and transcendental, impersonal and personal. Adikarna 6 is confirmed in Dasamula Tattva as follows. The living entity in everything in this material cosmos is simultaneously one and different from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right? So the lessons end here, and that ends in the Dasamula, the section on Sambandha. Right? So we see it just naturally goes. Yeah, I would say is that it's because you have the thing is that the material, because technically speaking, the material world, what you can, what you experience here, or what you can experience, I mean, yeah, what you experience here and what you can perceive here is just the Brahman and Paramatma. You cannot experience or perceive Bhagavan, right? It's only when the means even understanding Brahman and Paramatma is only through authority, right? But it's only when that authority is presented in the Parampara, coming with devotion, then you can understand Bhagavan, right? So the material phenomena, you know, means Brahman and Paramatma. Does that make sense? So it is that, because impersonal here, we don't mean impersonal means it's not a person. We mean impersonal means it's generic. If I say good, you know, like that, then it's a general quality. You know, if I say define goodness, you know, you say, okay, the person's nice, or he's kind, or he's honest, or, you know, we'll go through all kinds of qualities. But the point is it's generic. It can be applied anywhere. So that's what makes the impersonal. But that quality is still coming from the person, from Bhagavan. So Krishna is the support of Brahman. Right? He's the support of Paramatma. Means they're not separate. He's not. The point is Krishna is one. He's not non-dual. Excuse me. He's not, yeah, he's not non-dual. Means he's, you can't separate, but at the same time as he is a person is different. So that's the Achintabheda Veda Tattva. Right? So the living entities, the material energy, you know, the Brahman is all Krishna, but at the same time is different. So that then concludes how all these different elements of Sambandha are all held together. When we say the relationship with Godhead, then that establishes it. It's simultaneously one, but at the same time it's different. Is that okay? The Adikarna is supported by evidences. Okay, so now we'll go through the Adikarnas, means what was mentioned there within each Adikarna. Vritti. Okay. Shamshaya, doubt. The beginning of Bhagavad Gita replies to two prominent doubts. One, is there an eternal spirit soul different from the material body? Two, if such a soul exists, is it fully identical with Godhead? Right? So these cover the karmi and the jnani, right? The karmi is the soul different from the body, right? You ask most religionists, What's the soul? They'll say the body, or they'll say the mind. Right? It's not separate, right? And the impersonalist, soul exists, then they'll say he's fully identical with the Supreme Lord. You know, so you get two extremes. Either you're dead matter or you're God. There's nothing in between, right? You know, so this is like that. Purvapaksha, right? Shamsha is doubt, Purvapaksha is the objection. The first doubt is connected to the atheistic philosophy of Charvaka. The followers of Charvaka maintain that consciousness, normally regarded as proof for the existence of the soul, is just another product of matter. It should not be thought, they say, that because the elements of matter are unconscious, there can be no consciousness in objects made of them. There are many examples in which qualities originally absent in the component parts are developed when the parts are combined together in a particular way. For instance, betel leaf, nut, and lime chewed together acquire a red tinge originally absent in any of the constituents. Right? Because they're trying to say is that if you say, no, but you know, it's dead matter, how will there be consciousness and life? And their point is, no, but many times we see when we take dead matter and combine it together, it comes out different. You know, it means the betel leaf is green, right? And then the lime is white. So why is it when you put them all together, and then it comes out red? So their point is that see, it can change. So therefore, we can take dead matter, if you combine it in a particular way, then life will come, consciousness will come. But what they've failed to notice is that the change is still in dead matter. It's still not conscious. It's not that the red color that comes from it is now conscious. Right? So, like that. But it works good. The point is if one wants to be cheated, it sounds good. And the mind accepts it. Hey, great.
So now, this is the modern science.
Charvaka means it could be. Charvaka basically means he doesn't really worry about the Vedic conclusion. Yeah, so it's basically any non-Vedic will use this. That works on the platform of karma. Like that. Similarly, the elements of matter combined together in a particular way give rise to the living body having consciousness. Since consciousness ceases to exist with the end of the body, when man dies, nothing of him is left to enjoy or suffer the consequences of his actions thereafter. Therefore, Charvaka urges his followers, if you have no money, then beg, borrow, or steal, but in some way secure ghee and enjoy life. Right? It combines together in a particular way. Then there's consciousness. So therefore, you know, when you die, that consciousness goes away. So that shows it was the combination. That's in their idea. And since it goes away, there's nothing left, right? Because you know, we'll say we're not the body, but it's the consciousness produced from it is us. But then that consciousness goes. We're only left the body. So therefore, the life begins with that particular combination of the matter, and it ends at death. So therefore, in between, just have a good time, you know, like that. Enjoy yourself. That's his point. Because otherwise, when you're dead, you can't do that anymore, you know. And then, because of that, then since there's... you die there, there's no reactions afterwards, right? Next, there is no next life, so there is no karma afterwards. You only have to worry about what will get you now. You know, don't do something now, it'll get you now. But you don't have to worry about next life, because you won't be around. So therefore, then you can really go for it and enjoy. Right? You understand? So they have to cut out certain things in the philosophy to create this enjoying mentality. Because for most of them, if there's no karma, then it doesn't matter what you do. You know, that's a very essential point. Because if there's no karma in the next life, then it doesn't matter. You can do anything you like in this life. You understand? So that's one of the first things to go for. You know, and then since we're coming from matter, the point is this. If chemicals are just interacting and some chemicals are conscious and some chemicals are not, what's the big deal? How interaction goes? Because it is just chemicals. Right? So then right is wrong is just based on what you like, what's good, what's nice. You know what I'm saying? So it's very dangerous, but very popular. Right? You know, various elements of that, you know how you say. Yeah. The second doubt refers to the Mayavad doctrine of Kevala Dvaita. exclusive monism, right? Because we accept the monist, but not exclusive. It's not monism is just one aspect. You have the impersonal, you have the personal. They both go together. But they'll take it, no, it's only impersonal. The Mayavadis claim that the soul and the supersoul are identical in all respects. As it is explained by Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan in his commentary on Vedanta Sutra, Adhikarana 11, Pada 3. The Mayavadis argue that the soul and the supersoul are like the sky within the pot and the great sky beyond it. When the soul is liberated, he becomes the supersoul, just as when the pot is broken, the sky in the pot becomes the same as the great sky beyond. Right? So it means you have a pot, right? And there's sky, there's ether in the pot, right? And there's ether outside. So now if we break the pot, I mean, so the pot is limiting the connection, right? So if you break the pot, now there's no obstacle with the ether in the pot merging with the ether outside the pot, right? Sounds logical, just like Charvak, right? You know, but we have to understand, it sounds logical. The mind likes it. Why? Because the mind wants to be the enjoyer or wants to be the controller. That's why these philosophies work. Is the mind accepts it because we have this predilection for controlling and enjoying. Right? As soon as that's given up, then we understand these are just downright stupid. Right? They're foolish. Because the point is it means if they're the same, then you should be able to take the whole completeness of the sky and place it in the pot. Right? Otherwise, why you can only catch part of it in the pot? That means you've caught part of it, you haven't caught the whole thing. And you can bring another pot. And then you still have ether in the pot. Does that make sense? So all these examples they give, this is one of their better ones, right? More difficult to do. But like the green bird and the green tree, pretty common. And they say it's all green, but the point is there is a green bird in the green tree, right? So you know, that one's the more simple one they'll deal with because it's very direct. If that one works, then no need to go. If that doesn't work, then they'll use this one. So this is their more difficult one, right? But the point is it can do. Madhvacharya then defeated one of the biggest Mayavadis in South with the same principle. Because, you know, this same thing is that, you know, you have, you know, all the water and then you have some in the cup, but then you remove the cup and then it merges back. You know, the same principle. So he came to Madhvacharya and said, I've read your commentary in Vedanta Sutra. And it makes, you know, very logical, very well presented and everything. But this one point I still don't understand. So then Madhvacharya, he called for his Achman cup and his Gindi. And then it always comes on the stand. Right? The stand has edges. Gindi. It's those little water pots with the spouts on them. You know? Like that. So then he brings the two. Right? It means they come on the stand. Because generally you have the Gindi, you have your Achman, your Tilak, or anything that you deal with water for doing your Achman and other sadhanas like that. Doing your puja and all that. So he brings that. He takes them out. You know, the person's watching. He takes both of them, pours both of the water into that thing like that. And the guy, yeah, there's no talking. He just says, that's the point. You know, then Madhvacharya, like this, then he picks it up, pours the water back into this pot, pours it back into that pot, puts it down, and then puts them back. And then the guy, like, wow. And he just surrenders on the spot. So it's like a 10-minute... You know, how you say, you know, a 10-second debate that no words were spoken, right? That is, you know, he's a very, very prominent Mayavada. He surrendered, became a disciple. But that's the point, is that you can again put it back in the pot. So that means you didn't catch the sky, so there is a difference. There's a difference and a non-difference. So in the same way as the soul is non-different, but different.
I'm not sure I understand fully. So it means that in the example of Madhvacharya, to put together means there's oneness.
Yeah, yeah.
Able to put
because the point is the water is one, yes. But the forms, or in other words, the bodies, make the difference. So this is a Gindi and this is an Achman cup.
Yes.
So that's what makes the difference. But actually, they're not difference. Because if you pour them together, all the water is one. Yes. So the only thing getting in the way is the container.
Yes.
In other words, the soul is not different from God. But the container, this body, separates the two. So if you remove the body, then the two can merge.
Yes.
That's their point. The Madhvacharya then showed, yes, you can merge them. But at the same time, you can pour them back out and separate them again.
Yes.
So that means you can't say they're one. Like that. Does that make sense? Because the point is one's in the body, one leaves the body, so then one should merge. But the point is then one goes back into another body. So it doesn't work. You know, no, but if you make the final liberation where you no longer take birth. But the point is the principle is not going to change. The point is you didn't have a body in between. So why didn't it stay like that if that's the natural position? Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So there's a difference. So the Supreme Brahman doesn't have that consciousness of being attracted to material energy, but the soul does. You know what I'm saying? It, like that. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Lord Chaitanya, who was the first introduced to the Vedatapa in our society?
Yes. No, Madhvacharya is two, because he didn't want to get to anything that had the word oneness in it, he would avoid, like the plague. So, it's two. There's no... But he's showing there that's the Mayavadi's concept that you go together as one, but then you can pour them out and it's two. You know, so his point is, it's two. Like that. So, it was there because... Ramanujacharya, then he spoke this Vishishtadvaita, where it means special oneness. You know, he's bringing out the oneness of that, the transcendental mood, oneness of relationship, of the pastimes, and all that. So that converted a lot of people from Buddhism, which is all, you know, Buddhism and Mayavad, to the Vishishtadvaita, because their thing is it's all one, right? Or it's all nothing. So then bringing to there, it worked very well. But it didn't work completely. So Madhvacharya's point is that you have to be more direct. No, it's two. There is none of this oneness stuff. You know, so he's very, very strong on that point. You know, just to try to completely clear any, you know, vestiges of this Mayavada or Buddhistic philosophy. Does that make sense? When the soul is liberated, it becomes the super soul, just as when this pot is broken, the sky in the pot becomes the same as the great sky beyond. Right? But it's not as big. Because the soul is thus the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is the creator of the universe. This is where they take the steps to. And everything else that the Supreme is, right? So now, after you merge, then you become the creator. But the point is, they give credit to each other before they've gone there, right? So, so when they meet each other, then Narayan, Narayan, the more Narayan, you know, like that. They'll always, you know, like that. In this way, there's no difference between the soul and the Supreme Brahman. To support their view, the Mayavadis quote the following verse from Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. Who is the self? He is a person full of knowledge who stays in the life breath. He is the splendor in the heart, remaining always the same. He wanders in the two worlds. The self is the omniscient Brahman. He becomes freed from all desires. Being Brahman, he attains Brahman. He who knows this becomes the fearless Brahman. But here we're talking about the Brahman, meaning one comes to that Brahman platform, because one is Brahman. But fearless Brahman means opposed to fearful. Fearful means we don't understand that relationship with Godhead. So even though the Mayavadis will talk about, yes, we'll become this fearless Brahman, they never actually do. Because they still have the idea that I am the controller. Right? So they will actually never become fearless, because what they're fearful of is their relationship with God. Right? Because if you have a relationship with God, that means God calls the shots, right? But if we don't have a relationship with God, or we are God, then we call the shots. Does that make sense? So therefore. Okay, so Srila Prabhupada Siddhanta, conclusion. Srila Prabhupada refutes these doubts in Adhikarana 1. Okay? So this is the doubts that have come up. Right? And this is their objection then is explained. In other words, the Purva Paksha, the objection here, is that they give their examples, right? So we give our examples, right? So when we're presenting the Panchanga Nyaya, you have, Udaharana is the example, right? Purva Paksha, these Shamshaya and Purva Paksha, these are Vedanta Sutra terms, right? Yeah. So in dealing with these others, means there's two ways you're presenting it. One is that your logical presentation, you have your thesis, your reason, your example, right? Then your further explanation, and then your conclusion, right? So you have the Pratigya, Hetu, Udaharana, Upanaya, and Siddhanta, right? Upanaya means to bring near. You bring any other ideas that could happen and bring it and synthesize it. So that Panchaka Nyaya is then presented like that. That's the logical presentation, right? But the problem is why is there a need for logical presentation? Because people have doubts, right? So that means there may be a discussion or a debate, right? So then when you consider the elements of the discussion, right, rather than a presentation, then Vyasadeva uses these other terminologies. Does that make sense? So these other terminologies means is that you presented your pratigya, your thesis, right? And then you have your hetu, your reason. Now with the hetu reason comes their shamshaya, their doubt. So shamshaya and hetu are the same. So if you say it's the doubt, it's only a doubt because you've given a reason. Does that make sense? So, and then you give your udaharana, your examples, but then they have, from their doubt, they have their objection, and then they have their examples. So you understand they go together. Does that make sense? It's the same process. It just means one is just showing the logical, natural presentation, and the other showing that presentation being given along with someone else's involvement in it where they don't understand something, right? Yes.
What's the difference between samshaya and purva paksha? Because it's doubt and objection.
Because the doubt is just, you know, their question. And then the objection is why?
Explanation.
Yes, their explanation. Does that make sense? Yeah? Just like we give our reason and then our explanation. Vritti means notes. So whenever you see vritti, that means the author is saying something, right? But he doesn't say, the author now states, like that. He's trying to avoid being that bold. So we just put vritti. Okay? So you'll see it in any of the studies. Also when we go into the when we do the Dharma Shastra after the festival, then you'll see vritti is used, where it's the notes. Like that. Because it means if they're more serious than you have, like commentary is bhashya. Like that. But this is not commentary, that's just bringing out notes so it makes the study more clear. Information that we might not have noticed or added information to make it more clear. Does that make sense? Yes. No, because until you say something, how can anyone doubt? You know what I'm saying? It means as soon as you go, no! You know, it doesn't work like that. Because then you could say your was the thesis and their no was their shamshaya.
And others.
Yeah, well, this is to open it. This is just the opening, because to start this means, in other words, you're making a point, but you only make a point because there's already a doubt existing. right? It means like if you're going to give a presentation, you give a presentation already based on that there'll be, you know that there's already some doubt. So you've already included that. Like that. But when it's dynamic, when the interaction's going on, then these other, like in Vedanta Sutra, then he'll make the point in the Adhikarana, and then I'll say, but Jaimini says this, and then says the things he says, but then, you know, it says, you know, Vyas says this, and then, you know, the whole, does that make sense?
So, that's Panchanganyaya.
That process is Panchanganyaya. In other words, there's five stations that are there. You've made your main point, you're given your reason for it. Then you give your examples, your explanations. Then, because the doubt seems that it's something different than what you're saying, you bring them together and show that they're not different. He's just taking either a specific point, misunderstanding it. Something is there that he actually, it's not, it doesn't exist. It's no need. Or it's already existing in what you're saying. So it's not a separate entity like they're presenting it to be. Right, and then the conclusion is you establish your thesis again. Does that make sense? So what you're saying is just like basically is would be we say there's fire on the mountain. Okay, that's our thesis. So in logic, then we've said, you know, because A is fire. I mean, if A is the mountain and C is fire. So we say, you know, there's fire on the mountain. Okay? Now our reason for that is B. Right? Is that there's smoke. Right? And so we can see the mountain, we can see the smoke. So A and B are connected. And B and C are connected because, you know, where there's, you have smoke, comes from fire. So therefore we can conclude that it's come from fire. Right? So B is your reason. Right? Because if I say, there's fire on the mountain, right? And then someone, you know, you could say, no, there's not. But I don't know what you're talking about. How do I know it? So I'll ask you, why? What's your reason? And then I'll say, because there's smoke. Right? Then I can have a doubt. You know, well, actually, there's not fire in the mountain. There's a guy there, you know, there's a... 50 Cubans there that are smoking cigars, right? You know, so there's actually no fire on the mountain. There's 50 guys smoking cigars. So there, you know, then I can have a doubt, and then I have my, and then we say no, because wherever there's fire, wherever there's smoke, there's fire. That's our reason. And then they're saying no, but that's actually a bunch of Cubans, like that. You know, does that make sense? You know, so that's their points. You know, but then you point, then you'll bring out is that. The point is, are the Cubans on the mountain? Yes. And so are they connected to the cigars? Of course. Otherwise, how do they smoke them? So that means then that means that fire in their cigars is on the mountain if it's cigars. So either way, whether it's a bushfire or it's a bunch of, you know, Havana cigars, there's still fire on the mountain. So it's not a different point. Right? The point is we see the mountain, we see smoke, so we know there's fire. What is the nature of that fire? That's a different point. You know, because that would be this adhikaran is completed. So therefore, I can say that there is fire on the mountain, right? And then now the doubt will be is whether it's a bushfire or whether it's a bunch of, you know, Cubans. Does that make sense? And so then we could go into the next phase, right? Right? And then we find out when we get there that they're not Cubans, but it's actually Texans. Right, you know, so like that, you know, so that you work it out. Okay, does that make sense? Do you see the logic there? Because then you're trying to show is that, you know, you say there's not fire because you say it's another source of fire, but the point is the fire itself is on the mountain. What form it's in, that's another thing. That's a detail. But you've synthesized their argument into yours. Does that make sense? It works, but they have basically, they only categorize it as three. You have your point, you have your point against it, and then you have the synthesis. Right? They don't use words like conclusion because that would be against the academic, how you say? They're more than mood. It's just like their life, soul, you know, their yes, their whole modus, their existence, you know, their whole everything, you know. Yeah. So Does that make sense? So they don't use those. It means you've made a statement, but we're not saying that this is your thesis. Then you have the antithesis. Then you have the synthesis. So that's how they use it. So they'll use all five, but they won't necessarily, they'll count that the thesis includes all the reasons and explanations. So it's not as scientific, but it's the same basic principle. Because the logic comes from God, so it has to follow the same rules. How much they understand of it, that's another thing.
So Maharaj, in order to use this system in five steps, everything must be clear about...
Yes, everything must be clear. That's why you have to have your... means you have your knowledge, and you know other people, they have to define it. Like, I don't know, like yesterday in the class, so someone will go, see, you know, here is that, you know, saying that the Kshatriyas can be involved in illicit activities, you know. But, you know, Rupa Goswami says pure devotional service means free from karma and jnana. So therefore, then they can't, the Pandavas in gambling, they can't be on the platform of pure devotional service, right? So that's the doubt that comes out from it. But the point is their explanations aren't clear. So how do they define pure devotional service? Is it the activity or it's the mood of the activity? Right? So then they have to admit it's the mood. Right? And then also in the activity, did it say that the Kshatriyas can just, you know, as they like, be engaged in these things, or it said only for political reasons? Right? So therefore, on the political level, then there may be things, but then it's not the form. It's not an ideal form, but it's the form being used for Krishna that makes it devotional, right? So then you can show us that it's not a separate thing. So they're not defining clearly, right? They're taking that sin means non-devotional, but then according to that would mean piety means devotional. Because then they're taking it that the activity itself is the devotion. But no, it's engaging piety in the Lord's service, that's devotion. Right? So, engaging sin in the Lord's service is not ideal, but it will work. You know what I'm saying? Just like the devotees, you know, I think, I'm not sure up to what point it was there, but sometimes they'd you know, hop over the wall of the cemetery in the early morning and go in and steal all the flowers on all the graves and stuff like that, bring them back to the deities, like that, you know, stuff like that. So you wouldn't necessarily call that piety, you know what I'm saying? But in their mind, because, you know, they don't understand pure and impure, so for them it's just flowers, you know, and their point is, you know, what's the dead guy going to do with it, you know, like that, you know. Isn't the dead guy supposed to be underneath pushing up the daisies, you know, isn't he supposed to be making the flowers, so what does he need flowers for, right? So they come and they take the, they don't know, you have that term? Oh, see, maybe it's an American, okay. American, you say someone's dead, you say he's pushing up daisies. You know, he's underground and pushing up. That's what they do, you know, so the daisies. You don't have that. So, whatever. It's an American. So, you know, so therefore they don't need flowers. So we'll go and get the flowers, and we need flowers, like, so we'll get them and offer them to Krishna. So I'm not sure how long that was going on, but it was going on for some time it was explained that things in the cemetery aren't pure, right? You know, so, you know, leave those alone, right? Now it's just the neighbor's gardens you have to worry about, right? Like that, you know. So you would say it's not, but it's engaged in Krishna's service, so in that way it becomes glorious. But because you're working in a human environment, sinful activities are not recommended, because sinful means it goes against the grain of the natural unfolding of human interactions. That's why it's sinful. Right? Steal is sinful because you've taken someone else's quota. Does that make sense? That's the problem. Right? Because we say we go into the forest and we're walking along and there's a flower there on the side and you pick it, then, you know, no one will say, you know, you can't do that. You know? But if you're walking along on the sidewalk and in somebody's yard there's a flower and you pick it, then we would say that, okay? Because we see ownership. But the point is, in the forest, that all belongs to God. So, you know what I'm saying? It's the same thing. But we'll consider this not... So there are elements that we will consider that's okay, then that's called pious, and the elements were considered not okay, that's impious. Does that make sense? Because otherwise we put too much, we consider that the piety and impiety, that's spiritual. No, piety and impiety, that's religious. Right? And religion is to be engaged in the Lord's service. Right? Varnashram is to be engaged in the Lord's service. But it's not that the varnashram itself is the devotional service. So just so that way, then the piety is not automatically devotional service. But that's what's being inferred. That the sinful activity being performed, you know, then it can't be pure devotional service. Right? But they're not distinguishing it, that it's the connection between the activity and the Lord that makes it devotional service. The emphasis is on the activity itself. So they're inferring that pious activity, recommended pious activity in the Shastra, that's connected, that is recommended, you know, for the devotees, that's automatically devotional service. Does that make sense? Like, you know, being a householder is there, having an occupation, you know, cooking, you know, all these different things, all pious activities. So that's how the devotee maintains himself, how his life is, right? But it's because he connects it to Krishna that it becomes devotional, right? Because the same activity is being performed by the follower, the Vedic culture, but he's not connecting it to Krishna, so it's not devotional. Does that make sense? So therefore, there's the weakness in the logic. You understand? Does this make sense? It means we've been, like, for this year, then looking at the analyzation of things. And we might think it's, you know, what's the need of getting down to that degree of analyzation? But the point is that's so you can separate these points, because where problem comes is you merge something together. Does that make sense? You know, that's where I was saying before, prejudices come up because we connect things that actually aren't necessarily connected. Does that make sense? Yes.
For Kshatriya, when they act in their dharma, it's okay for them to kill.
Like, yes.
And then Arjuna was doing it for Krishna with knowledge.
Yes.
So then it was devotion.
Yes. Yeah. In other words, every varna or every ashram has something that's nice and something that's not nice. You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing. So but that's where they get their strength, their strength or weakness of that ashram is. You know what I'm saying? Brahmachari, it's unencumbered, right? Nothing's yours. You don't have to worry about anything. You just have to be fully absorbed in rendering service, right? Life's simple, very straightforward. So that way it's strong. But now if someone has material desires, then it's weak because there's no facility for engaging the senses in a broad range. So that's where the grihastha ashram is strong, because it has that facility. But to have that facility, then it's very encumbering. Does that make sense? So each thing has its something there, that's some element. You know what I'm saying? Just like you do business, you can't 100% tell the truth. You know what I'm saying? You know, enough that the person's comfortable, but not that much, you know? Okay, so now, page 9, right? 9. So, Adhikarana 1. The living entities are eternal and subordinate to Godhead. Pratigya, thesis, lesson 1. The constitution of all living entities is to be eternal servants of Godhead. 2:11-30. Hetu, reason. 2. The living entities are parts and parcels of Godhead. Right? So, they're eternal servants of Godhead because they're parts and parcels. Right? Because there has to be a reason. We say the constitution of all living entities is eternal servants of Godhead. Right? So, what would be the reason? So, the reason is, therefore, because they're parts and parcels. Right? Right? So, now having said they're parts and parcels, now a doubt can come up. Right? Because the first thing, it doesn't mean that you can't get from there, but it's when you give the reason. Because then they can say, But no, they're not parts and parcels of Godhead. It means they're just produced from matter. Right? If the living entity is produced from matter, why do they have to be subordinate to God? Right? That's the Charva. Or the other is says, they're not parts and parcels of God. They are God. So why do we have to be submissive to God? You understand? Those are the doubts that come before. So the hatred. So then now in our example, then we'll have to clear that. Right? Udaharana. Example. Lesson 3. Living entities compared with the sun and the sun rays. Right? So that'll be the example. Vritti. Srila Prabhupada gives example in his purport to 1334. There are various theories regarding consciousness. Here in Bhagavad Gita, the example of the sun and the sunshine is given. As the sun is situated in one place, but is illuminating the whole universe, so a small particle of spirit soul, although situated in the heart of this body, is illuminating the whole body by consciousness. Thus consciousness is the proof of the presence of the soul, as sunshine or light is the proof of the presence of the sun. Then purport to 15.7. It is, however, understood here that the living entity, being the fragmental part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, is qualitatively one with the Lord, just as the parts and parcels of gold are also gold. Then in 2.22, the Vedas, like the Mundaka Upanishad, as well as the Sweta Svatara Upanishad, compare the soul and the supersoul to two friendly birds sitting on the same tree. One of the birds, the individual atomic soul, is eating the fruit of the tree, and the other bird, Krishna, is simply watching his friend. Of these two birds, although they are the same in quality, one is captivated by the fruits of the material tree, while the other is simply witnessing the activities of his friend. Krishna is the witnessing bird, and Arjuna is the eating bird. Although they are friends, one is still the master, the other is the servant. Right? So Krishna is not, if we're saying they're the same, then the difficulty comes is then why is one bird eating and the other bird's not, right? Because he's not hungry or he's got a bad stomach or, you know, like that. He's getting too old, you know, like Super Soul's been around a long time, you know, like that. You know, it's like that. So, but it's because, he's the master, the other is the servant. Right? Upanaya, further explanation. The Lord and the living entities are qualitatively one and the same. Right, so that's been explained here. Also, we see in the, what do you call it? Prabhupada's explained that before. Right? Siddhanta conclusion. Krishna begets all living entities in the womb of material nature. Yes?
For example, in this example, it's Srila Prabhupada who is speaking. So if somebody says, but we have other example directly from the Shastra and not from Srila Prabhupada's purport.
No, but that'll be from... I mean, here he's got Sweta Svatara Upanishad. No, this thing of the sun and the sunlight, that'll be from some Upanishad also. Any example Prabhupada gives is Shastric. It's not... He's not making it up. Right? He's not talking about potatoes and Ferraris and other stuff like that. You know anything?
Yes. But if it is directly the Shastra, means if somebody, because it's supposed to be quite logical, you know, and we are supposed to be convinced.
Yes. Well, this is just giving an overview. It means we'll go through this in detail after. You know what I'm saying? This is the second level. The first was the whole chapter. Now we're taking the Adhikaranas in more detail. So we see the flow that's going on. Does that make sense? Like that. So more detail will come after. Vritti, Shamshaya, doubt. At this point, a doubt may arise, right? Because this is now finished your first Adhikarana. So that's what it says, is that when the Adhikarana ends, it's established one thing, but it'll create the next doubt, yes.
So when
do
you explain the conclusion?
Because Krishna is the one, means the full will come out in the purports and stuff like that. That's the difficulty. It means if this is going to be too confusing, we can go straight to the other one and then look at this afterwards. I don't know. You know what I'm saying? But here, just look at this. So now that you've established, means Krishna begets the living entities, because he's the one. So he's the source of them. So because he's the source, they're part and parcels of him. Therefore, they're subservient to him. Right? You know, that's what you're establishing. So now from that, then your doubt can come up. At this point, doubt may arise. Is material nature dependent or independent? Right? Because we've established, okay, the living entities are. But what about material energy? Right? Purvapaksha. In the Gita 16.8 is said, they say that this world is unreal with no foundation, no God in control. They say it is produced of sex desire and has no cause other than lust. Right? Because that's what you're... Charvaka would be establishing, because it means that he says by a particular combination of the material elements. So that means that would be sex, right? And that is then coming from lust. So therefore, lust is actually the cause of creation, right? So therefore, what you desire, you should endeavor for. Because if we say life is glorious, right? It's only glorious because its foundation is lust. Right? Does that make sense? That's how the Charvaks would come up with their philosophy. Therefore, just spend your time trying to enjoy yourself. Right? But the point is if lust is how it's seen, means that's how you entangle yourself, that's how you're in your various situations you're in because of lust. But it's not the cause of life. Right? The living entities are separate. And the material energy is controlled by the Supreme Lord. Therefore, you know, you have your lust, and according to the rules of material energy, then you'll get your rewards or not. Does this make sense? Okay. Yeah, means once we get after we finish the sixth adhikarana, you know, which means the 46 points, then doubts on sambandha would be cleared, on relationship. That's the idea. Because it's like, you've cleared this one, but then something else will come up and clears one, like, until you get to the final, and then everything is cleared. Right? And it starts with it. Because if everybody accepts that we're all parts and parcels of Krishna, servants of Krishna, then there's no need to discuss. Right? So we're starting with that fast. The karmis will say this, the jnanis will say that. Right? Okay, so is this okay, or should we just go to where's it start? Yeah, page 20. Because then you have the same thing, but then you get all the points from the purports and everything like that, so it'll seem more logical. Okay? These little ones with the little four... The diamond with the four small diamonds? What is that? Those are Admatattvas. Okay. Oh, I see. So these are then the lessons with all the points being made and with all the questions and then all their things like that. Oh, I see. Okay. Okay, no, I think we'll just continue through this and then we'll go with that, because that'll get into so many other questions. Okay, so Adhikarana 2, material nature is subordinate to Godhead. Pratigya thesis, nature and the living entities are all subordinate to Godhead. Reason, Godhead in his impersonal features is all-pervading, including the material nature and the living entities. Right? So he means he's all-pervading, means everything is him. Right? But at the same time, it's different. Lesson 8. Nature means potency. Everything that exists is emanation of Godhead. Right? Because nature, the living entity is potency, that nature is potency. Right? So that means he's the energetic. Godhead, not lesson 9. Godhead is omnipotent, and therefore he's the master of all potencies. Namely, the material, spiritual, and marginal potencies. Udarna, examples. Lesson 10. Earth, water, fire, air, sky, mind, intelligence, and ego are all products of material potency. The living entities are products of spiritual potency. Vritti. Srila Prabhupada gives the following example in a lecture on Bhagavad Gita 7.4 from New Vrindavan, 1974. Bhinna means separate. An example is when I speak into the tape recorder. When you play the tape recorder, you hear my voice. But it is not me, it is my separated energy. With my energy, I have spoken. I have vibrated some sound and it is recorded on the tape. When it is played back, it produces exactly the same sound, but it is separated from me. Try to understand, this material world is just like that, bhinna, separate. Real life is in the spiritual world, and these energies, the external energy, Krishna says, are separated. Separate means you cannot perceive Krishna directly from this energy. Right? So in other words, means real life's in the spiritual world, because that's where Krishna and the living entities interact on an actual, real level. Right? But here it's separated, that the potency of, you know, how you say, walking and breathing and talking and interacting and, you know, driving, you know, your vehicle and all these things, that goes on in the spiritual world. But here, that seeming potency is there, but it's been separated. So it is, but it's not. Mike probably gives the example of, he speaks, it's recorded, but what you're hearing on the tape is his separated energy, but it's not him. You understand? So it's same, but different. You understand? So what we're seeing here is Krishna, but it's different. It's a separated energy. So it is Krishna, but it's separated. Yes, right? That's why it's so important that we deal with Krishna as a person. Because, you know, if now I only interact with the tape, and not with Prabhupada, now that would be a bit of a problem, right? Yes.
Does Srila Prabhupada sometimes use the example of the cow and then the milk?
The cow and the milk, yeah.
The milk is also cow.
Yeah, the milk is also cow, but it's different. Yeah. Like that. You know? So that would be the Vedic example, right? Does that make sense? But then we might have a doubt, but the milk's not actually... The milk is different, right? In other words, the concept of there can be that oneness but difference, it means, is more common in the Vedic understanding, right? So people, your more general populace can think in that way. Does that make sense? But you'll have a difficulty, the Western, they're not used to that kind of thing. Because you are the body, so they can't even tell the difference between the gross and the subtle, let alone the soul, right? So then by the tape recorder, then you'll say, no, but it sounds like Prabhupada. It sounds exactly the same. So it is, so therefore, you understand? So then from there is, yes, it is, but it's separated energy. So Krishna's, how everything works here is working on his potency. So it looks like the spiritual world. It's the reflection. But at the same time, it's not real. You know what I'm saying? It means the person's there, the other person's there, and they are talking. That's actually a fact. But that's real talking. And that's one soul talking to another soul. That's not happening. Right? Because the soul thinks of the body, and the other soul thinks they're the body, so the two bodies are talking. Right? But because you identify with the body, you think I'm talking to that person. Right? But you're not. But in the spiritual world, Krishna as a person, who's non-different, his form and him are non-different. The living entity is non-different from his form. They're talking. They're actually talking to each other. You understand? So it looks like it here because of Krishna's separated energy. So it looks real, but it's not actually. Right? So that's why you can't actually perceive Krishna directly from this material energy. You see here, and then you, through the understand the Shastra, then you can get back, but you have to have heard that from authority. Otherwise, you won't be able to figure it out. Because those who aren't working according to Vedic authority, they look at this world. They come up with all kinds of ideas. You know, of how it was created and who's in charge of what and this and that and so many things. Right? Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport to 14.3, the scorpion lays its eggs in piles of rice. And sometimes it is said that the scorpion is born out of rice. But the rice is not the cause of the scorpion. Actually, the eggs were laid by the mother. Similarly, material nature is not the cause of the birth of living entities. The seed is given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. they only seem to come out as products of material nature. Thus, every living entity, according to its past activities, has a different body, created by this material nature, so that the living entity can enjoy or suffer according to its past deeds. The Lord is the cause of all the manifestations of living entities in this material world. Okay? Upanaya, further explanation. Above these two potencies is situated the Almighty Godhead. Conclusion. As omnipotent Godhead is manifested as all-pervading impersonal supreme truth, in one manner described, material nature is non-permanent, the spiritual nature is permanent. Okay? Vritti. Shamshaya, a doubt. Here a doubt may arise. It is possible for the superior energy, the living entity, to come under the control of the inferior energy, material nature. Okay. Oh, is it possible? Okay. For the living entity to come under the control. Purva Paksha. In Bhagavad Gita 3:42, the Lord says, the working senses are superior to dull matter. The mind is higher than the senses. The intelligence is still higher than the mind. And he, the soul, is even higher than the intelligence. Right? Purport to 8:20. Krishna's superior spiritual energy is transcendental and eternal. It is beyond all the changes of material energy, which is manifest and annihilated during the days and nights of Brahma. Krishna's superior energy is completely opposite to in quality to material energy. Right? So the doubt is there, is that, but the Gita is describing that the soul is superior to material energy, so how would the soul come under the control of material energy? Right? Because we're saying that, you know, the living entity is subordinate to God, material energy is subordinate to God, and the living entity in the conditioned state is subordinate to material energy. Right? So how would that be if they're superior? Adhikarana 3. The living entity is born of spiritual nature, but it has the tendency to enjoy material nature. Forgetfulness of his real nature is the cause of his multifarious trouble. Pratigya, thesis. Lesson 16. The living entity is born of spiritual nature, but it has the tendency to enjoy material nature. Hetu. The living entity and Godhead, being qualitatively one, are both called Purusha, the enjoyer, and the nature is enjoyed by them. Therefore, nature is called Prakriti. Udharana. Godhead is real enjoyer, but the living entity is the conditional enjoyer under the modes of nature. Right? Vritti. Srila Prabhupada gives the following examples in the purport to 13.3. One has to understand the position of Prakriti, nature. Purusha, the enjoyer of nature, and Ishwara, the knower who dominates or controls nature and the individual soul. One should not confuse the three in their different capacities. One should not confuse the painter, the painting, and the easel. This material world, which is the field of activities, is nature, and the enjoyer of nature is the living entity, and above them both is the supreme controller, the personality of Godhead. 2.23. Because they are atomic individual souls eternally, sanatana, they are prone to be covered by the illusory energy, and thus they become separated from the association of the Supreme Lord. Just as the sparks of a fire, although one in quality with the fire, are prone to be extinguished when out of the fire. So again, we're seeing, because that subservience that was there in the beginning, the living entity, though enjoyer, like the Lord, because he's part and parcel, he is the small enjoyer, right? While God is the great. Upanaya. The real position of living entity is therefore that of an enjoyed by Godhead, or servitor of Godhead. Forgetfulness of his... So we can see here is that the nature of the living entity to enjoy the material energy, because he's nature of Godhead, but that means if he has that nature, God has that in full. So God is the enjoyer of the living entity. Right? But now, here's a very important key. Is if God is the enjoyer of the living entity, the living entity is enjoyer of material energy. Right? So now, the point is how is enjoyment attained? What's the medium of enjoyment? You understand? It means you're using the senses. Right? So living entity is using his senses, God's using his senses. So the difficulty comes is that the living entity is trying to enjoy the material nature, not use it in the Lord's service. Right? So the point is that the engagement of the senses isn't the difficulty. Right? This is where it becomes difficult, because the karmis is engagement of the senses for enjoyment. The jnani, since you don't want to enjoy, you're not engaging the senses. Right? So the senses remain. If you enjoy by engaging your senses, that means the Supreme Lord enjoys by engaging his senses. So if we're the subservient enjoyer, then our enjoyment has to be in line with his enjoyment. Right? So when he enjoys, we enjoy. Because we've tried this enjoying separately, that didn't work out so good. Right? It's still not working out so good. But we're still determined. No, that there's this one little, I just did it like. Okay, conclusion. Forgetfulness of this real nature of living entity is the cause of his multifarious troubles. So all his troubles are coming up because he's forgotten his subservience to the Lord. Right? So he established he's an enjoyer, but he is the small enjoyer. Right? So now this will bring up a doubt again. Here a doubt may arise, is it possible for the forgetful soul to reestablish his relationship with Godhead? Objection. In Bhagavad Gita 16:9-22, the Lord states, "Those who are envious and mischievous, who are the lowest among men, I perpetually cast into the ocean of material existence, into various demoniac species of life, attaining repeated birth amongst the species of demoniac life, O son of Kunti. Such persons can never approach me. Gradually they sink down to the most abominable type of existence." Right? Use that abominable word again. So. Right, so then according to this, one would see is they sink down and down and down, and then that's it, and they just stay like that, right? But, yeah. Yes. Yes, Nityabhada and Anadi. So then they say he'll stay there. But the point is why is the living entity in that position? Not because of God's arrangement. It's because of our forgetfulness of the Lord and our endeavors in interacting with material energy. So if it's up to us, we probably would stay here forever. Right? Does that make sense? But fortunately, it's not up to us. Right? It means we have it doesn't mean our free will is not intact. Don't get worried about that. But it just means that God steps in. Right? Adhikarana 4. Godhead comes himself for senses confidential servants to reclaim these forgetful living entities. The forgetful living entities can know Godhead only if he explains himself or if he is explained by his confidential servants. Pratigya. Godhead comes himself or sends his confidential servants to reclaim these forgetful living entities. No one can know Godhead unless he explains himself or he is explained by his confidential servants. Right? Because we already said before is that you can only perceive the material energy, and being separated from the Lord, you won't be able to understand God from it. Right? By hearing a tape of Prabhupada, you don't know anything about this tape. Right? So you hear that. Will you be able to understand, here's the founder Acharya of, you know, ISKCON, which is coming in the line of Rupa Goswami under Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya? No. That's the point. So you can't know God by studying material energy. Because it's the separated energy. Right? So that's why, unless it's explained by Godhead himself or his confidential servant, you won't know. Right? Reason. His descending or so-called birth is different from that of any ordinary being. Examples. Man's misidentification with material nature is a malady from which fearfulness is born. Man's attempt to get rid of that fearfulness of survival by work. Knowledge or mystic power is always baffled, because always remember, the potency of work, right, is a separated energy. The potency of knowledge is a separated energy. The potency of the mystic powers is a separated energy. So therefore, through any of these, you can't know the Lord. Living entity seeks happiness by serving other living entity, driven by a false sense, false desire of enjoyment. Right? So the living entity serving anyway other living entities for the idea to enjoy. That's how it works. You're serving in that way. But because we're enjoying from that, we don't call it service. Right? If it's called service, then we get all bent out of shape, and you know, you have to start a union, and you know, all kinds of things like that. But if it's not defined as service, then we'll consider it. You know what I'm saying? Because let's say the mother is cooking for the child, right? In her mind, is she the servant or is she in control? She's in control, right? Now, as long as the child understands that, everything works really nice. But as soon as the child thinks, no, but you're supposed to cook for me, you know, whatever I want, you're supposed to cook. Now, do things go nicely? No. So as soon as it's defined that it's actually service, because you're controlling by service. So that's the secret, is that we are controlled, but you can control by service. Right? Does that make sense? That's how it works. So when the living entity is fully surrendered to serving the Lord, then that devotion controls the Lord. Right? So that's how the feminine nature works. Controls through service. Right? As long as it's not pointed out. Does that make sense? As soon as it's pointed out, then you're dealing with tattva, not rasa. Right? And the feminine nature only works with rasa, not tattva. So therefore, you want to be in tattva? Fine, go ahead. You know? And then according to tattva, yes, there's the kitchen, there are the ingredients. And, you know, go for it. Does that make sense? Like that. Man's attempts to get... Man's attempt to get rid of that fearfulness of survival by work, knowledge, or mystic power is always baffled. Right? Because the fearfulness is coming from his misidentification with the material energy. So then he becomes fearful. Right? If you're not the body, are you going to be fearful? Right? Like, you know, if I say here, okay, we put this rock here. I'm not this rock. And then you come and say, well, you know, I'm going to kick this rock, or I'm going to step on it, or I'm going to throw it outside there. It's kind of like, yeah, go ahead. You know, what do I care? Knock yourself out. You know, come on. Does that make sense? Right? But the problem is that if I identify with this rock, then there's a problem. Oh, he stepped on me. Oh, he threw me out in the garden. You understand? So it's misidentification that causes fear. There's a real identification of servant of Krishna. That's why the Shastras again and again say, become fearless. Right? So that's one of the symptoms of Nishta, is one is fearless. Does that make sense? At least predominantly. When Godhead descends, the fools consider him as ordinary man. Only those who are addicted to sinful or unlawful acts, only such foolish men of demoniac principles do not want to serve Godhead. Right? Right? So if one's addicted to what's unlawful, then you won't want to serve Godhead, because serving Godhead means then you naturally won't, because if you serve him, he's not impressed by sinful activities. To him, they're not a medium for interaction. You know what I'm saying? Like that. Is that so? The medium of interact is pious things, right? So that's why only this pious person can surrender. Right? Lesson 29. Only those who are law-abiding, faithful men revive their God consciousness when they are in difficulty, in need of money, inquisitive, or aspiring after gathering knowledge. Right? Riti. In his purport to 7:15. Srila Prabhupada compares the grossly foolish hard workers to asses and swine. So it doesn't matter that it's 8:45. You said 7:15, it's 8:45.
7:15 is just the lesson 28.
Okay, so it's not referring to the time. No, okay. The ass does not really know for whom he works so hard day and night. He remains satisfied by filling his stomach with a bundle of grass, sleeping for a while under fear of being beaten by his master, and satisfying his sex appetite at the risk of being repeatedly kicked by the opposite party. The ass sings poetry and philosophy sometimes, but his braying sound only disturbs others. This is the position of the foolish fruit of worker who does not know for whom he should work. He does not know that karma action is meant for a yajna sacrifice. Right? Means all these things, when they explain it, means we'll think they're kind of funny, but this is actually how the donkey thinks. He thinks when he's braying, it's very nice music, you know, or very eloquent poetry or philosophy. He actually thinks that. But unfortunately, no one else seems to appreciate it, you know. You know, such a loss, you know, like that. The swine who eat the night soil do not care to accept sweetmeats made of sugar and ghee. Similarly, the foolish worker will untiringly continue to hear of the sense enjoyable tidings of the flickering mundane world, but will have very little time to hear about the eternal living force that moves the material world. Because they're so absorbed, there's no taste. So these are the examples. Not that it's not inherent that you can't, but they just don't. Upanaya, further explanation. Lesson 30. God consciousness, which is transcendental, is never revived by dint of works, knowledge or mystic power, but only by devotional service. Right? Because otherwise you can't know the Lord. Conclusion. No one is barred from approaching Godhead, because simply by willing to approach Him, one becomes at once purified. Right? So that's the point, because then we can say, okay, because it started out that these persons by their karma are so absorbed, but Godhead Himself comes, He descends. He doesn't become like the others, therefore He can establish. Right? And so then, hearing that, then even these mudas, they can take it up, you know, or in this case we've given two, so you could probably say hogs, dogs, camels, and asses. Then they can take it up. Such a the poetry of that, you know, so nice, right? You know? Prabhupada works it out, because you know the order and all that. You know, you could have used, you know, pigs or boar, use hogs, right? I don't know if it's a common. You use hogs? Yeah. Okay. Simply by willing to approach Him, one becomes at once purified. So the willingness is very, very important, right? That's where the main purification is. One is willing. Right? Then further purification is by that commitment to be determined to not be involved in something that's not devotional, or to be involved in something that is. Does that make sense? That's the main point. It's because otherwise, if the soul is actually pure, how will the activity purify him? Does that make sense? The soul is pure. He's only covered. So how will good work purify the soul? No, it's because you do good work, you are given that position that you're looking for. Does that make sense? So when that purification comes because the Lord is pleased. Right? He's the one that purifies, not the work. Otherwise we think it's the work. I'll do this activity, I will purify myself. It's not. The activity doesn't purify. You understand? So that's why the Vaishnavas aren't so worried about prayaschitta, because it doesn't purify. Right? It's that attempt to please the Lord that He's pleased, you become purified. Yes?
By purified, do you mean determination becomes clearer?
Those are symptoms. Purify, yeah. Those would be symptoms. Yeah. That would be whatever. One's less inclined because the knowledge is increased. The detachment is increased, so one's less inclined to be involved in, you know, how you say, more hoggish or doggish activities.
So when Shukadeva Goswami says that the Lord in the heart cleanses the desire for material.
Yes, He cleanses the desire by giving that knowledge of detachment, like that. So He purifies, so therefore. Yeah. The point is, but because it's free will, we had to be willing. Point is, let's say you're in the water and you can't get out of the water. But now someone can help you out of the water if you're willing. But if you're flailing your arms and this and that, they can't help you out of the water. Do you know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? You know, so it means it's just like, what do you call it? If you're trying to save someone in the water, and you're in the water, if you go close to them when they're like that, they'll simply grab you and you both sink. Right? So you're supposed to stay away. Or if they're not so good at it, you know, then you go up and you punch them in the head, and then they stop doing that. Then so they became indirectly willing. Right? Or they were willing but didn't know how to express their willingness. Right? So you help them in that expression.
Is that whenever the guru then he sometimes embarrass
can means if it'll work. Point is you don't means you'll use these techniques, these direct techniques, if they'll get the result. If they won't, you don't say anything. So the point is one might not learn something because he's not willing to learn it. Right? Someone willing to learn it, then, in other words, the student is there, and when there's some symptom that you can see that they could learn this or be willing, then you'd start to teach them. But if that's not there, you don't bother. Here some may raise a doubt. Is it possible for an ordinary person to approach Godhead? Right? Because now we've already said the mudhas. So now we said, they don't. But now, okay, they can, but can an ordinary person? Purvapaksha. In Srimad Bhagavatam 1.8.20, Queen Kunti says, "You yourself descend to propagate the transcendental science of devotional service unto the hearts of the advanced transcendentalists and mental speculators who are purified by being able to discriminate between matter and spirit. How then can we women know you perfectly?" In the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says, "Out of many thousands among men, one may endeavor for perfection, and of those who have achieved perfection, hardly one knows me in truth." Right? So this could come up. So we would say, okay, well, the second one, the one for women, well, that's so ancient and all that. It's not so ancient. You know, the Christians only accepted women had souls very recently, like that. So it's not that far away. So the person may have the doubt. Conclusion. Okay, Adhikarna 5. The confidential servants of Godhead explain that any man can attain to transcendental loving service of Godhead by his own occupation. Now, by the term here, probably used man, does that mean women can't? So would that be the next natural doubt? So here man means generically as a species. Like that. Because we always have to remember the Shastra, there was a time when they were being, overly, like pins and needles sensitive. The feminists were very worried that, Prabhupada in the purports and the Shastra always says he. Why not, why is always she, like that. Just like, it's like the archaic, it means older English and that. Let's say you say one. One should do this or one should do that. And that works for everybody. But then if you want to be more specific, and bring it into the more contemporary, then you have to say, he or she. But then that would work good. But then what is it, the L? I can never get it right. LGBT? Yeah. Means they might complain because, are they a man or woman? Like that. So then you'd have to say it. So it's always, and so therefore he, she, or it, can, like that. But then, so we see Prabhupada uses this third person, just one, or a person, or like that. But if it says him, or he, or man, it's because the living entity thinks they're Purusha, right? That's what we established before. And Purusha means man. Right? So that's the point. Vishaya, thesis. The four castes are scattered all over the universe according to acquired qualities of the modes of nature. The Brahmanas, the Kshatriyas, the Vaishyas, the Shudras. Any man can attain to transcendent loving service of Godhead by his own occupation. Right? So that's the point. By your taking your occupation, connecting to the Lord, anybody can come to the transcendental position. Right? Reason. Only under such transcendental modes can the ordinary fruit of workers, the salvationists, or the mystics also attain to Godhead. Okay, so now the example and further explanation. The result of work is to satisfy material needs. The result of knowledge is to attain salvation. The result of mysticism is to see all-pervading Godhead in this localized aspect. All these can be attained indirectly by transcendental loving service only. Riti, in his purport to 9.18, Srila Prabhupada writes, to approach the different energies of Krishna is to approach Krishna indirectly. One should directly approach Krishna, for that will save time and energy. For example, if there is a possibility of going to the top of a building by the help of an elevator, why should one go by the staircase, step by step? Right? In other words, the processes of seeing God through his energies and all that, like we were discussing before, then that is valuable if the understanding of seeing God as a person isn't able to be appreciated. Right? So then by analyzing according to the mechanical aspects of what energies are working, and therefore what's the form, what's the activity, and what is the quality that you're trying to obtain, then you can see the Brahman aspect of anything that you look at within the material phenomena. But Krishna is still beyond this. So then why would you be doing that except to please him as a person? So you bring it back to the person. But at some point, then this activity is not so important. It's Krishna that's important. But it's important to you because we're attached to it. Right? So if our attachment to it, we're attached to what's sinful, then that will be given up. Right? As we become purified, we can give it up. If it's pious, then it can be engaged. Right? But still, it's the engagement that's of value. We don't engage it, no value. Does that make sense? Srila Prabhupada writes, so therefore, if you can go directly, why go by others? So therefore, devotional service rather than these others. It's not that we don't use these methods, but for us, they're very quick, transient positions. You know, you might use it for a few moments to figure it out. Then it reminds you, okay, it's Krishna. Then you remember Krishna. But if we're talking about salvationists and mystics and karmic, they're spending thousands, if not millions, of lifetimes moving through that. Well, the devotee does it in a few moments. Does that make sense? So the point is getting to Krishna. Srila Prabhupada writes in the purport to 1848, this example of fire and smoke is very appropriate in this connection. When in wintertime one takes a stone from the fire, sometimes smoke disturbs the eyes and other parts of the body. But still one must make use of the fire despite disturbing conditions. Similarly, one should not give up his natural occupation because there are some disturbing elements. Rather, one should be determined to serve the Supreme Lord by his occupational duty in Krishna consciousness. That is the perfectional point. When a particular type of occupation is performed for the satisfaction of the Supreme Lord, all the defects in that particular occupation are purified. When the results of work are purified, then connection with devotional service. When connected with devotional service, one becomes perfect in seeing the self within, and that is self-realization. Right? So
it's taking the stone from the fire, that's a bit of a like an agricultural type of example, is it? The hot stone is going to heat the bed at night?
That could be. You know, taking it out so you can put some water on it to make the sauna work. But, it, you know, in some way, you know. The conclusion. In all scriptures, therefore, the only aim is how to attain Godhead, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So all scriptures, that does, so any scripture, that's all it's trying to explain, nothing else. Okay? So then we'll continue tomorrow with this last doubt and last Adhikarna, then we'll go into the main body. Okay.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samavita Bhaktivinoda ki, Jayanitai Gaurapremananda.